Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 196.
It is.
196.
Whizzing through them.
Ooh.
What was that?
It's a noise.
Right.
And I stand by it.
Okay.
It's excitement noise.
Is it? Right.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Ooh, how are you, Nick?
I'm fine.
Yeah,
I'm fine. One thing I am slightly distressed about is that what you've done to my curtains over there.
What have I done to your curtains?
That seems very upsetting to me.
Oh, I drew his curtains earlier.
Incorrectly.
On a sketchpad. No, I pulled the curtains and I did not straighten out crease.
That seems so, yeah.
Well, maybe don't put boxes right next to your curtains that I can't see.
It's always someone else's fault, isn't it?
It is.
It's always
someone
else's fault.
Mainly yours.
Take responsibility for your actions, dear.
No, I don't think I will. It's much more fun to blame you. And it works.
Yeah, I'm going to have to talk
about it. Oh my God, are you actually going to straighten your curtains?
Yes, because it's annoying me. It's right in my eye line.
Nah, that's fine. I would never do anything like that, me who changes table in a restaurant 6 times. He's muttering. Oh my God, they're so beautiful. It really ties the room together.
Exactly.
Aside from the horrible emotional distress of your curtains,
that was
quite stressful. Right, you're well otherwise.
Oh well, I was.
I was going to say any poisonings this week, but have your eyes been poisoned?
No.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely none.
I will be drawn on nothing.
Exactly.
I've never heard of arsenic. If you're over the curtain debacle,
yeah, that was stressful.
I'm like that though. If I see something off in my house, then I have to sometimes leave popping up. No, I can't possibly
None
settle until that's there.
Can't
I have to
with that.
Put off all this work I'm doing until that is absolutely sorted. Well, speaking of fussing with curtains and procrastinating massively,
yes.
I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes. Thank you very much this week to Retro Rosie.
To Grey Law Gideon Grimm.
To Jane Stafford.
To Helen Taylor.
Bruce Tyler.
And to Emily Laird.
Ta-da!
Hello, you lovely, sexy, sexy Patreon subscribers, you beautiful people. We had fun on Patreon this week. We talked of films.
We did talk of films.
As films that drive people to...
I'm surprised you haven't done films already, to be honest, after many, many years of this.
I am surprised as well, actually. There's not a lot of...
Films that kill.
Film poisoning stories. Well, on Patreon, we delved into some that genuinely did result in murders. These films that have influenced people to kill, not in a really gross way. The problem with like film curses is either they're deeply depressing, someone took it as an opportunity to go, I know, I'll stab someone lots in the face, and you go, oh, that's horrible. Or they're all spooky and there's no real crimes associated with them. Or it's a lot of people going, I reckon this film did this. And which isn't the case. But we did find some. I found some.
You found some.
And we had fun. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us on patreon.com/thepoisonouscabinet. This is where you get extra weekly episodes from The Poisonous Cabinet, as well as loads of bonus content. There are 2 tiers on there that you can join. The arsenic aficionados and the cyanide connoisseurs. And you can delve into huge amounts of extra extra content from your beloved podcast. Also, if you love The Poisonous Cabinet, do please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this show, particularly Apple iTunes. We say this not because we want the arrogance of sitting around going, oh my God, we're so great. Leaving 5-star reviews really, really helps our podcast and any podcast you listen to. So if you love us and if you love any other show, please just take the couple of minutes to go and leave a 5-star review. We would really, really appreciate it. And it will bring us to more ears.
Indeed.
We have a shout out from Diane Tiller, who has just purchased a Cyanide Connoisseur membership.
Yes, I recognise that name.
For their husband, Bryce Tiller. And it is their birthday. It is Bryce's birthday on Saturday, March the 23rd. So Diane really wanted to do a shout out. They both love the podcast and we have inspired them to try many, many cocktails that they normally wouldn't have.
I'm glad that rather than doing the murder people.
Yes, that's the good side of yes, the inspiration.
That's the good inspiration from this. Merry birthday to you.
Merry birthday. Thank you so much for being lovely, lovely supporters. If people do want shout outs in the future, you can just message us and we'll consider it, but we'll probably do it.
Sinead will do most things.
Well, Nick, are you ready?
Yeah.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
Meh.
Or
we drink poison and talk about cocktails. Yes, let's do that.
One of them. Shall I pick?
You pick.
I reckon.
Dealer's choice.
I reckon we should go with the first one.
Okay.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. So, Nick.
Yeah?
This week's secret ingredient is...
It's a lovely pistol.
A pistol. Not a gun.
No.
No, different from a gun.
Yes.
Is it?
Very much.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, come on. No, I'm sorry. I'm not having this from you. On the rum, white rum, dark rum, spice rum.
Gin.
London dry gin. Spiced gin. Slow gin. Other types of gin. Yeah, gin okay. From my cupboard.
I will give you that. I think, look, it's nearly 200 episodes. There's only so many ingredients. I will in the future give you more witches at some point. Okay. A pistol.
Yes, it's a pistol.
Sorry, I had revolver in my head because someone said it and I was like, we never did that. Shut up.
Well, it would be a revolver. It's described in the story as a pistol, but it would be a revolver.
What's the difference?
Not much, really.
No? Is a pistol a revolver, but a revolver isn't a pistol?
I think that's exactly what it is.
Is that it?
Yes, I think that's exactly right.
Like a frog is a toad, but a toad's not a frog.
I don't know that.
Or whatever M from Real Life Ghost Stories is lying about. We have this fight regularly about toads and frogs, by the way. But yes, okay, so with a pistol.
Pistol.
Pistol whipped, pistols at dawn, pistols generally.
Yeah.
More pistol puns.
Pistols.
Whatever you come up with.
We're having a loaded pistol.
A loaded pistol. Ooh, sounds dangerous.
I don't know, I've said pistol too many times. It's now sounding weird.
It's lost all meaning.
It really has. It's like pistol.
Pissed on a pistol. It sounds dangerous and sexy at the same time. Mm-hmm. We're primed and ready. I think it is high time for us to skip into the Poisonous Cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick. Loaded pistol.
Loaded pistol.
It looks very nice. It's got a...
I'm intrigued.
It's not quite brown.
It's not entirely brown.
What would we call this? An amber hue?
Something like that, yes.
And a big old lug of ice.
Yep.
Ooh, looks nice.
I'm intrigued by this one.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
Should I be afraid?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just... I'm going to smell it first. Ooh, it smells of things.
Well done. Yes, it does.
Ooh, that's got a pleasing smell. A tantalizing smell, if you will. Okay, well, I think there's nothing for it but to dive in.
Dive in.
Looking at a loaded pistol right down the barrel.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Okay. Smoky. There was something twiggy there.
Twiggy, smoky.
Oh, it's like a bonfire.
Bonfire,
right,
yes.
That's it.
Bonfire.
what's that?
What's going on
Mezcal?
There? Yes.
Hey, that's what I'm all up. Is there anything else smoky in there?
No.
No, but there's brown.
It's brown.
Is there a whiskey?
Nope.
Meh.
There is not.
There is something medicinal in there. There's something. What is that? Is there chartreuse?
No.
But is it Benedictine?
Nope.
Strega?
Yes.
Hey. Well, there's
going,
a sort of
going
a,
through the list.
Well, no, there's a sort of a yellowy hue to it. If you look
there
at it,
there is that.
Oh, Straeger and Mezcal together at last.
Mm.
What else? Bourbon? So nope. no whiskey, bourbon, no. Rye variety.
No, nothing of any of that.
Rum?
Nope.
Calvados?
Nope.
Brandy?
Nope.
Gin?
Nope.
There's no other drinks. That's it. I draw the line. How many more is there?
One.
Not bitters, though.
There, one and some bitters.
There's always extra bitters. Triple sec.
Nope.
Maraschino.
Nope.
I really don't know what the other thing is. Oh, vermouth?
Think, yes.
Red vermouth?
Yes.
Yay!
So I was going to say, think brown. So.
Oh, yeah, I've forgotten about the brown there. Oh, okay, so Mezcal, Straeger and red vermouth.
Yes,
what
and,
a weird combination.
And grapefruit bitters.
Grapefruit bitters?
Yeah, and so I thought it's a really... It's well reviewed or well sort of liked. So yeah, and I thought it's a really... It's a combination of units that I would never have put together. So I thought, oh, this is a great one to try.
I can get on board with that. I can get on board with that.
I can see how that works.
It's almost... Oh God, this sounds very bizarre. It's reminiscent of an old-fashioned. Even though none of that applies. Because it's quite a harsh alcohol taste. There's not a lot of sweetness in there. And I don't know why I'm saying that, but it's... But yeah, with the bitters and the old-fashioned and the whiskey. I don't know why. It tastes like a whiskey kind of combination, probably because of the smokiness.
Well, I think
that
with the smokiness of the mezcal. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So
don't listen to me, clearly. Someone else back me up on this when you're mixing it up and go like, actually, it does, we've invented whiskey with this. If you didn't have whiskey, this is how you'd make it.
The three ingredients actually needed to make a decent whiskey.
Yes, Straeger, red vermouth, and mezcal.
Yes.
Found in any good household.
Absolutely. For in any country around the world, these three really niche specific ingredients.
Well, I like it's Italy meets France meets Mexico. Oh, wow.
No, and that's growing on me. It's another one you need to get your palate sort of acclimatised to the smokiness of the mezcal. But no, I'm liking that.
That's really interesting. I'd be very happy if I was served that.
It's going to send me insane.
Because you've knocked a few back, haven't you, Dick?
I have. And this is not the shortest of episodes.
No, because you know you've got 4 days off in a row.
Yeah.
You've got a long weekend coming up. So you got bowled with a glass of wine and then a Negroni and now this. And I'm probably going to be making you another one of these, isn't it?
Forgetting I've got to read 400 pages.
I'm fine with all of this.
Oh, good.
Let the games commence.
Let the games begin.
Well, I think that's a success.
I would agree. Yeah. No, I like that.
That's possibly the strangest combination of ingredients making quite a lovely cocktail.
It's certainly nothing I'd ever have conceived of putting together.
I'm almost reluctant to give it, though, a full 5 stars because it shouldn't work.
And also, I mean, it is a relatively niche thing. I think it is. Yeah. It is quite spirit forward. It's quite pokey. It's strong. It's got some random shit in there that not everyone is going to have in their cupboard. Very few people are going to have Straeger. So it's not going to be your day-to-day cocktail.
But it is the 4 a.m. or kids playing with the parents' liquor cabinet cocktail.
Potentially.
Oh, it's Straeger and the red one. And let's put this white one in there as well. And then suddenly they've made the most beautiful cocktail.
Maybe. And probably as dangerous as a loaded pistol, I feel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a good name, isn't it? Yeah. It'll get you there. Well, I'm very happy. I have a loaded pistol in my hand. I'm pointing at you, Nick, going, tell me a story.
This is always encouraging.
Is it time for a story?
It's always time for a story.
Yay!
So today, we are off to Hendricks County in Indiana.
Oh, lovely.
To the sleepy little village of Belleville.
Belleville Rendezvous?
Nothing much ever happens in Belleville, really.
Oh.
It's a quiet place where people know their neighbours and go about their business and everything is delightful and not very fussy at all.
Okay.
That is until the early hours of the morning of the 10th of January, 1895,
ooh,
when Belleville's sleeping inhabitants are rudely awoken by the cries of murder. Murder! There's cries from the street. Now, as the residents sort of poke their heads out of windows or go, what is disturbing this sort of delightful January scene?
Ooh.
They realise these cries, these sounds, seem to be coming from the direction of the small Methodist church that serves the community. The church is run by 29-year-old Reverend William E. Hinshaw and his wife, Thurza. Now, the Reverend is well-loved in town, and people come from all over to hear his sermons, to hear him preach, and he is in high demand to minister to his flock. Okay. So everyone goes, well, something... Right, we need to go and investigate. What's going on over there? So people...
That's what everyone's saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, let's investigate. What's going on over
there? What's going on over there?
So, there's cries of murder.
Yeah, so people are leaving their houses. It's snowing. People are heading out and venturing out towards the sound of these cries. And they are horrified to come across the groaning body of their beloved pastor lying in his nightgown on the roadside outside the parsonage.
Pissed.
No, not at all. Oh. The villagers flock around him to get him out of the snow and move him back into the house. But as they go to pick him up, their hands come away soaked in blood. Now, seeing that the side door to the parsonage is open, the group carry the Reverend inside. But as they go to move into the house, they come across another horrifying sight. Oh, the Reverend's wife, Thirza, lying face down in the doorway, blood flowing from a bullet hole through her head. She is quite dead.
Okay.
So they carry... Shit. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, so quite a dramatic scene unfolding in Little Belleville.
Where they wouldn't be used to this sort of thing.
Absolutely not.
It's a quiet, sleepy town.
It's a quiet, sleepy town. There's about 400 residents of this little village. So it's a small little place. Everyone knows everyone. Nothing like this has ever happened in Belleville. They make their way into the house. They make the minister as comfortable as they possibly can. The sort of local healer is called for. And it's ascertained that his wounds are not life-threatening. Okay. So he's going to survive. So they bandage him up as best they can. And he is sort of left to rest. Really just rest and sort of recuperate and recover from his wounds.
That's nice, yes. Yeah. You've been shot. Rest is what
rest
you need.
Rest is what you
surgery?
Need.
Surgery? No.
Surgery. Well, I think someone goes for a doctor, but they're in the middle of nowhere. There's not a surgeon living in the village.
Whoever turns up and goes, have you tried a hot poultice?
Yes, so they patch him up as best they can and
we'll
leave him to rest.
Wait for the next full moon.
While waiting for someone to arrive.
Yeah.
Now, after a few hours... The Reverend, he regains consciousness. He's awake, he's lucid, and he is able to relate what has happened that night. He's able to tell the people around him what has gone on. He says that he had been woken by the sound of a pistol shot close to his head.
A pistol?
A pistol.
Is that
a pistol? He had opened his eyes to see this massive, he describes it as a big, burly ruffian, sort of standing over the bed, holding a pistol out towards his sleeping wife. Now, seeing this stranger in his bedroom, the Reverend had reacted. He had leapt out of bed to tackle this man. The man was strong, but the Reverend is determined. And he's desperate as well. And he is able to hold his own as this sort of struggle between these two men moved out of the bedroom and into the adjoining parlour. In the parlour, the Reverend sees that his assailant is not alone. He's not by himself. Oh. A second, smaller man, who the Reverend describes as wiry, is waiting in the parlour, armed with a razor.
Now,
the second man reacts to seeing his colleague, his friend, being tackled by the Reverend and sort of slashes out at the Reverend with this razor, causing this sort of fight to dissipate as the Reverend cradles his wounds.
Also, colleagues must look out for each other.
Well, yeah, colleagues, friends, co-workers, accomplices.
Co-worker. Shall we go
yes,
to murder?
Co-worker. Now, just as the Reverend is sort of like staggering back, trying looking at his razored wounds, at that moment, the white robed figure of his wife stumbles into the room, throws her arms round William's neck, saying, "Will, is this you?" before she falls to the ground.
William,
the Reverend. William,
right,
is his
right.
name is William. Yeah, so she's there. She crumples to the ground. Now, this sort of distraction of the wife arriving in the room is enough to startle the Reverend, and the villains come at him again. Two of them on him now. Yep, so fists and razor all going at the Reverend. This group fight their way through the parlour, out the parlour door, into the yard.
Oh,
and it's here that the larger man again pulls out his pistol. And he fires at the Reverend. The shot catches William in his side and he collapses in the street while the two villains flee into the distance.
Christ!
Yes!
What's gone on there?
So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, so big hulking man has come in, shot the wife.
Shot the wife.
In the head.
Yep.
In the head?
Yes, it was power was appeasing. Yeah, shot
well,
the wife.
She's able to stagger out and then collapse. Yep. He goes, William, is that you? He's fighting them up, but there's a wiry second figure.
Yeah, with a razor blade or with a cutthroat razor.
It seems targeted. Sorry, I'm sure you're going to tell me. it's quite a chilling opening scene.
No, absolutely. It's
I haven't had one of these in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very dramatic series of events. Nothing like this has ever happened in Belleville. And the small town is in uproar. It's absolutely, this does not happen. All of the inhabitants are gathered around the little parsonage, sort of swearing vengeance upon the bastards who have murdered the wife of their beloved pastor.
Yeah, how good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all there going, pitchforks and rolling pins and all sorts. And
someone's just holding up a chicken.
Yeah, cows and all sorts going.
Someone has a slipper going, I will do such damage with this.
Absolutely. I'll get them. I'll give them a good old slipperin'. Now, news of this attack quickly spreads. So, telegram.
Across America.
Well, certainly into the local county, and then absolutely soon enough into the wider country. Many people contact them to donate money for a reward to catch these villains. And soon the reward reaches $2,000 for the apprehension of these criminals, which is a huge amount of money, absolutely. Yes. Now, because of this generous reward, many private detectives start working on the case. They sort of flood into the area looking to get their hands on this $2,000. But no one really seems to be getting any closer. No one seems to be able to identify the culprits, where they went, what they wanted. It's all a bit... Nothing is really going anywhere. 10 days after the murder, really not much has progressed. And there's no clues, no evidence pointing in any particular direction.
Horrible random attack.
Yeah, and two of the sort of leading residents of Belleville, they are fed up with this sort of lack of progress in the case. And they call upon Detective H.C. Webster of the Webster Detective Agency. And request that he takes up the case and starts investigating. Now, initially, Webster says, nah. He doesn't work for reward only. Sort of thing. He's got a salary. He's got expenses.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's not going to work on the off chance that he might be the one who gets the reward.
I mean, that's fair. It's also the equivalent of going, could you please investigate this? But it'll get you exposure.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got
a business to run. He runs a detective agency. He's got a business to run. He can't do it on exposure, as you say.
If you just do this, then I'll recommend you to all my friends.
All my murdered friends. I'll pass them your number.
I will write a review for you on this bit of board.
Now, thankfully, these businessmen, they are adamant that they want the best of the best work in this case. So they agree. We will pay your salary. We will pay your expenses. If you get the reward, good for you.
Yeah.
But we will cover your costs to do this. We just want the bastard who has done this brought to justice.
Good for them.
And our town to regain some semblance of civility and normality again.
Has it turned into Sodom and Gomorrah since it has
happened? There's reporters arriving every hour. There's putting more people flooding into the town. People raking up everything.
Fair point. People coming
to gawp at sort of the parsonage where the pastor was lying in the roadway and
stuff
like that.
They're a simple, quiet town. They want to go back to that.
They just want to get this over and done with. Get the guilty party found.
Right.
Prosecuted, done, and to move on.
I just had the impression that there were a couple of villagers or townspeople who suddenly thought, oh great, it's the purge. And then we can let rip, crime rules.
It's probably some sort of setting up tourist trails around town.
Maps to movie stars' homes.
Yeah, exactly. See the murder trail here. Only tuppence. So Webster has taken on the case. The next day, he drives down to Belleville to start his investigation.
Okay. Oh, he's got a car.
Nice. Yeah, indeed.
Oh, fancy.
Now, for the first few hours, he spends his time just sort of walking through the town, listening to what people are saying, catching on the gossip of the locals. The current theory seems to be that this was a theft. This was a robbery.
Robbers had
entered the house to pilfer the Reverend's valuables. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Mrs. Hinshaw had awoken as they were searching through her nightstand or something like that. She had, with the first awake, the robber had reacted, shooting her dead, had gone to then shoot the Reverend. He had woken up beforehand.
The struggle had ensued,
exactly. Yeah. He had sustained his injuries and they had fled. Everyone the detective speaks to is singing the praises of the Reverend. How courageous this young clergyman had been to tackle these armed intruders. I mean, he had been popular before. He is now sort of hero god status in the local sort of community. He is a true county hero, the Reverend. Next, the detective decides to take himself down to the scene of the crime. He goes to visit the parsonage. He had reasoned that there would be some evidence of robbers trying to break in. There would have been a jimmied door, a broken window, something like that. But curiously, the detective can find no signs of forced entry around the house at all. Which makes him go, curious, curious, he says. Now, as the detective is pondering his options, a man comes out of the house. It is the parson's brother. He had heard that Detective Webster was in the village, and he insists that the detective come inside, speak to the Reverend, hear what happened sort of firsthand. You must speak to my brother.
It'd be funny if the detective was going, I was planning to, mate. This isn't your idea.
Yeah. Well, at first, the Webster, he declines. He says no. Obviously, the Reverend is still recuperating from his injuries. I don't want to disturb his rest. He wants to do his thing around town. But no, the brother is quite insistent. He's awake. You must come and talk to him. So Webster, okay. Fine. He goes into the house where the Reverend is lying in bed recovering from his gunshot wound and what ends up being 17 razor slashes that he has sustained across his body.
Christ.
When the detective enters the room, whatever he was expecting to see, it is not the man in the bed before him.
Oh.
He later says that his first thought was that the preacher would appear to better advantage in the prize ring than in the pulpit. With a face that could have adorned a pugilist.
Right.
So obviously the Reverend was some sort of hench motherfucker. Yeah. He is not sort of like the tweedy, nerdy, slight, bespectacled Reverend that one might imagine.
Yes, slight man of prayer
Exactly. No, apparently he's this like, hench.
And probably his like face is quite battered.
He's all
like,
battered, you know, and bruised.
Cauliflowered ears, broken nose. Yeah, so, he's wearing two boxing gloves.
So not at all what the detective was expecting, but sort of quite this sort of like tough looking chap lying in this bed.
Nice.
Now the Reverend retells his story to Webster while the detective, he sits in silence. He just listens. He makes the odd note. Makes the odd note in his diary. He doesn't ask any questions. He just he just looks at the Reverend and hears his account of what happened. He stops his recital. The detective thanks him for his time and leaves. No questions asked, just what have you got to say about what has happened? The next few days, the detective is seen around the town, speaking to various people, having chat here and there, and then he leaves. He returns to his home, and he's sort of considering all that he has heard and coming up with his own theories about what may have happened, theories that really no one else had considered. A day or so later, Detective Webster appears at the offices of Otis Gully. Now, Otis Gully is the prosecuting attorney for Danville. This is a town about 9 miles from Belleville, which has the jurisdiction of the smaller towns in the area. So Otis Gully is responsible for prosecuting all the crimes in the local sort of area, including those in Belleville. He presents the attorney with the facts that he has learnt from his talkings and his investigations and tells them that he is ready to charge the Reverend William Hinshaw with the murder of his wife.
What?
Yeah, have a break.
I think we need a drink. What? Shut up. What?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Nick, we have our drinks.
We do.
What's going on?
I know.
What?
It's all crazy. I've turned it topsy-turvy.
You've turned it topsy-turvy. Oh, you know what I did really like, though, as you were saying, and it's the great power of listening. Except if you don't need to ask a lot of questions, just listen.
No, just listen.
Let someone dig their own hole.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, also, how much evidence does he have? I may be like putting too much faith in this detective going, it was the Reverend going, that's impossible. Maybe
we shall find out.
All right, go tell me.
Okay.
Tell me everything.
So 15 days have passed since the murder of Thurza Henshaw. The Reverend has recovered from his wounds sufficiently to take a trip to his parents' home in Winchester, which is about 60 miles from Belleville. It's his intention to stay at his family home, to make his recovery, to grieve the loss of his wife, and he's going to stay there for the foreseeable future, he believes. However, Detective Webster is not going to allow him to sort of slip away and disappear. He travels to Winchester following the Reverend and places the preacher under arrest. He escorts him back to Danville to testify in front of the coroner's court.
Nice.
Now, news of the Reverend's arrest quickly spreads.
Very, 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 very fast. Not going to go down well.
Throughout the county. Exactly. Everyone is fucking outraged. Everyone is livid that such accusations are being made against their beloved preacher. Detective Webster was denounced as an unprincipled reward seeker who should be strung up the moment he sets foot into town.
Oh, Christ.
People are out for his blood. Absolutely. How dare he accuse such a honourable, principled, beloved man of doing such a dreadful, dreadful thing.
Oh, it's tense. It's tense.
It really is. Now, when the detective arrives in Danville with his prisoner in tow, pretty much the entire population of Hendricks County are there waiting for him. Yeah. They are there. He's able to get through to sort of the courthouse and, yeah, go into the coroner's court. But there's a massive crowd of people clamouring to get in outside, waiting for the gossip to find out what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
Now, the inquest is carried out. No sensational claims are made.
Okay.
The Reverend is not accused at the inquest.
No.
And they come back with a murder by person or persons unknown. The Reverend is released from custody.
Right.
Now, apparently, this threw me slightly when I was reading it, going, well, why arrest him if you're going to let him go? But apparently this was all part of a ploy that the Detective Webster and the prosecuting attorney had drawn up. Now, they believed wholeheartedly that the Reverend was responsible for this crime,
yeah,
and they wanted him to know that they thought he was responsible for this crime.
So,
but they are not yet ready to go to trial. They don't quite have the evidence they need to pin it on him.
Okay, it's a good ploy, though, isn't it? Just say, like, you have to testify at the coroner's court, which they would have to.
Yep.
It doesn't mean that you're charged with a crime, but it's going to shit you up a
bit. It's going to shake you up, absolutely. So now the detective has time to build his case carefully. He is now free to take the time he needs, and he will then present his case to a grand jury who will then decide whether he goes to trial or not. Now, the Reverend now is a bit screwed. If he scarpers, if he runs, then that's tantamount to announcing his guilt, really, if he runs. So he's got to stick around town, act like nothing's happened, while he knows this man is convinced that he is guilty of murder, and is going around town talking to all his friends and family about how this man murdered his wife, and the Reverend can do nothing about it.
It's a good ploy.
So
I like it. It's gonna get to you.
It's gonna start drilling away in your brain, isn't it?
Scratching, isn't it? It's gonna start scratching away, and then people are gonna look at you differently. then someone's going to crack.
Exactly.
Whether it's the Reverend, whether it's the people starting to turn on him. Is that going to have influence? Is someone going to come forward? It's going to prove whether he really is a pious man and like shows,
exactly,
no, I am completely innocent of this, or is he just starting to...
Yeah, so it's a clever move from the detective, absolutely.
I love that. And also, it's very simple in its execution, where we're like, this is the greatest detective ever. He's like, I'm literally doing my job.
Yeah, I'm doing my job, but he's doing it incredibly well.
We need no fancy shit. Don't need any of that Agatha Christie nonsense here.
So, I mean, he goes on and he employs two of the most prominent sort of surgeons in Indiana to go to Winchester, where Thurza Hinshaw has been buried in the family vault, and conduct an autopsy. Mm. Their examination shows that the pistol ball passing through her skull would have killed her instantly.
So how did she get up?
Exactly. The Reverend's story about her coming through the sitting room, putting her arms around him, talking to him, and then collapsing. Impossible. It could not have happened.
She would have died
instantly. It would also shown that if she had collapsed where she was found, if she was standing there and she had collapsed, the momentum would have taken her out of the door. There were some steps going outside. She would have collapsed, tumbled outside. She would have ended up in the yard. It showed that she had been dragged to where she lay and dumped on the floor.
She'd been dragged. Oh my God.
Now, when these autopsy reports were made public, popular opinion sort of starts to change. Yeah. There are not for everyone by any means, but there are some who start to see holes in the preacher's story. And actually, this evidence is actually pointing to possibly he is a guilty party here. Webster might be onto something.
Yeah, it's always the most fervent people. He's like, he is a saint and I support him. One shred of something that might not be quite right with his story. I always knew he was a wrong'un. The most vocal people on Canterbury Residence Group are always one who'll change their mind as soon as they get a little hint of something. Yeah. It's that one guy who thinks it's the Purge is going, I knew it! Smash the state! No, mate, we've told you no.
Now, I mean, after the autopsy, the detective then reveals his next piece of evidence that he has uncovered.
Okay.
The good Reverend had a lover.
Shut up.
Known as Miss F.
That's not classy.
Miss F is her name.
Miss F, though, that's a bit on the nose.
Well,
I mean, come on now.
So Miss F is said that she was strikingly beautiful.
Of course.
This woman. She was about 40 years old, apparently. Hot. But it said she looked half her age. And William were like teenagers in love.
She can still be hot if she looks 40.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But I'm saying what people say.
I know, but it's at the time, like, she's 40. But she looked like she could be much younger, yeah, which is exactly. Way hotter. You bastards.
Because when you're 40, you're dead.
I mean, yeah, that's the fuck a 40-year-old. Oh, yeah. Don't worry, guys. She could pass for 20.
He's 29.
Well, she knows a thing or two.
So that she does.
She's hot and she's older.
She knows what she's doing.
Let her live her life.
Apparently they're having a grand old time.
Justice for Miss F. You know what? She has been maligned.
Now, as news begins to spread about town, about the Reverend carrying on with apparently Miss... Now, it's odd that there's no further information about who Miss F is. She's apparently someone who lives nearby. So she must have been identified.
Would Webster have just been trying to protect her because she didn't have a part in this? It's just the fact that she happened to be his lover.
Potentially, yeah.
It does seem like they would go, no, what a scarlet woman.
But yeah, so news begins to spread about town about the Reverend apparently carrying on with someone else. And it suddenly becomes remarkable about how frequently the Reverend and his wife are out of town conducting parish business. They're visiting nearby villages and things like that, doing churchly things, when he would suddenly be called home.
Right.
Some emergency would happen. He would have to return back to Belleville. But it's far too late for his wife to travel. His wife would stay with the good parishioners that they are visiting. Stay there overnight. I will come back in the morning when it's light and it's safe to travel. All good. I'll go home, deal with this urgent business. On those occasions, Miss F was seen to leave the Hinshaw house just before daylight. Quote, showing every appearance of having passed the night there.
How do you show every appearance?
Big
of
ruffled hair,
brushing her teeth.
No clothes on.
Sleeping cap on. There it is. He was walking home, going, "Don't worry, darling. You stay in this village." His pants were already down his ankles. Just going somewhere. is such a shitty gossipy phrase, isn't it? We have no information on this whatsoever. But a woman left, and it definitely looked like she'd spent the
she
night.
She spent the night.
Oh, we can tell these things.
Yeah, exactly. Scandal, scandal, scandal.
Scandal, scandal, scandal.
Now, the evening on which the murder had occurred started in a very similar way. William and Thursda were at Cherry Grove, where he was holding a meeting with his flock. As it got dark, he told his wife that he had to return home.
Oh, no.
She should stay, enjoy their friend's company, have a lovely evening. He would come by back. He would come back in the morning, pick her up. All would be well. This time, however, Thursda is having enough of it. No. Nope. I have no desire to stay here. I am coming home with you.
Yeah.
I am coming home. She rides the way home with her husband after the meeting. And most of the way, others travelling on the same road overhear a loud argument between the couple, during which she apparently accuses him of having an affair.
Who's she, riding with? Are they riding alone or is it just people passing?
Well, I think it seems to be quite a busy road. There's sort of like people in carriage behind them or something like that, and they're just overhearing.
people in carriage behind them are having the time of their lives.
So they're in a horse-drawn buggy in front, screaming at each other. There's people behind going, oh, shit, this is great.
This is great. Snacks. Yeah. Pretending to dust the horse.
Get a bit closer. Get a bit closer.
Yeah. We're just like, oh, no, your wheel's coming off. Carry on.
So apparently they hear these accusations, this argument and accusations of infidelity. Now, Detective Webster takes the story up from there, saying that when they get home, she sticks with her husband like glue, giving him no opportunity to warn Miss F that he has not come back alone.
Ah, good for her. It's tense though, isn't it? That's not nice.
During the night, Miss F lets herself into the house.
Hello.
And her appearance results in a fight between husband and wife. Obviously, Thursda is lying in wait for Miss F to appear. Or has just gone to bed. And then
they're both in bed.
They're both
like, okay,
in bed.
Good night, good, husband
good night,
dear.
Beloved husband.
Yes, you're looking at the door a lot, aren't you? Well, I'll be looking at the door too.
Yeah, and Miss F in the middle of the night creeps into the bedroom. Looking to get into bed with the Reverend, and his wife is lying next to him. Obviously,
she gets into bed. Okay, right. Oh, Jesus.
Now,
oh, wait, three-way. Okay. Oh, no, it's not like that.
No, unfortunately, not so much fun. This results in a huge fight between husband and wife about the ongoing infidelity.
Him still insisting that he doesn't know her.
I have no idea who this woman is, how she got
it's
a key.
It's not me. I'm not me. This isn't my house.
Yeah. But this results in the Reverend pulling a pistol and shooting his wife.
Bastard.
Murdering his wife. Now, despite knowledge of this affair in the local area, many, many people... Well, now, since the detective has now revealed
right.
Lover...
I see.
Despite this, there are still people who are refusing to believe the detective's versions of events.
Well, you would, wouldn't
so
you?
So because... more and more people are sort of coming over to his side of the story, but still the vast majority are like, no... The Reverend, you've proved that he's having an affair.
He shot his wife in the face.
He shot his wife in the face, but no, he's a Reverend. He's a good man.
But he represents their faith.
Absolutely.
If the Reverend can turn so terribly and commit the worst act, then what is your faith? What is your God?
Yeah.
What do you believe?
And they sort of cling. They say, well, if there hadn't been an intruder, if William had done all this, how did he get so injured? How was he shot? How did he get all these razor wounds and things on him?
I think we can all answer that,
don't
we?
get out of that one, sort of detective man. Come on, answer this. Webster refuses to answer the question, saying he will save his evidence for the jury.
Nice. Oh, God, I love Webster. He's sexy. He's just silent. You would just be
silent.
You would give him all the evidence. But I will tell you nothing within 5 minutes and going, and I did this, and I did this, and I love you.
Now, as I say, so for many people, the Reverend is still a great hero for what he has done. He has fended off his wife's attackers. He has defended himself. He is a beloved preacher who has struggled valiantly to save himself from these dangerous ruffians. He's also from quite a well-known family in Indiana, an influential moneyed family. So that always helps as well. And people are queuing up to tell reporters what a splendid chap he is. What an absolute great, great guy the Reverend is.
Splendid.
Now, by now, the detective, he is also quite famous.
Yeah.
His name is all over the press. And they have made him into a hero or a villain, depending on which paper you read.
Great.
Sort of the papers that sort of, yeah, the Hinshaw family have used their money to influence. He's an utter bastard.
Of course.
But other papers, he's the hero sort of exposing this corruption. So it really depends on what your media is like. I mean, he says, the detective says, that lifelong friends turn their back on him in the street for what he is saying. He loses so much. And he is quite deeply affected by the hate that he encounters from friends and from complete strangers. He says, how can it be that all these people are against me and believe I am wrong? But he holds on to what he believes, despite public opinion sort of against him. And he says, I know I am right. And what need I care if the whole state is arrayed against me? These people do not know what I do. If they did, they would be with me in my determination to bring this white chokered blackguard out of the pulpit and into the penitentiary.
Nice. Good for him.
Yeah, he is adamant that he knows the truth.
But is that phrase, try that in a small town? Because it's not like the big cities or anything. Small town, the attitude would be like, no, he's our reverend and we're sticking to this. And no, you can't come in. And it's, you know, it's the same as any kind of case. It's like, you know, which side do you believe?
Yeah. And a really interesting demonstration about how split people are about William's guilt.
Yeah.
Thurza's own mother believes that William is innocent. She cannot comprehend that he would ever have hurt his wife, her daughter, in this.
Babe.
On the other hand, her father is entirely convinced that William is guilty, that her husband has done this.
Yeah.
Now, this is an elderly couple who have lived all their lives in peace and harmony. They become so bitter towards each other over this, they end up divorced.
Wow.
Over this split in what has happened.
I mean, it's traumatic, isn't it? You've lost your daughter. Horrendously
so.
Your daughter's been murdered. Do you want to go, okay, do you really want to confront me with the fact that I have been happy with my daughter living with someone who is capable of doing that? I feel guilty. No, don't want to know. Don't want to know. Everyone in the town probably going, no, we believed him completely. Mm. And we feel like fools, so no, we're going to side with him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's, oh, man. Mate.
William Hinshaw is sent for trial. The trial lasts 2 weeks. Now, the defence are quick to put to Webster the question that he had refused to answer before. How do you explain the injuries that the Reverend had sustained?
Explain it.
Yeah, how did he get up shot and covered in 17 razor cuts?
Yes.
The detective proves that all of Hinshaw's wounds are self-inflicted.
Yeah.
The pistol shot in his side merely grazes the flesh. Yes, it bleeds a lot, but it is not deep. It is not life-threatening. The course of the bullet showed that the pistol had been held in his own right hand. So it's sort of like from the side down
yeah,
through his side.
Yeah.
The 17 razor cuts are scarcely more than skin deep.
Scratches.
They bleed a lot, like a paper cut. They bleed a lot, but they're not going to kill you. Their direction shows that he has held the weapon again in his right hand and drawn the blade over himself. Not a single vein is severed.
Yeah.
And now he argues that during what was supposedly a desperate, frenzied attack, with this man slashing away at him, what you mean? He didn't hit a single vein. He didn't get anything more
than
skin
deep.
Didn't
get the arm. Didn't get the neck. Didn't get the vital, really deep in the face.
No, it's all superficial skin wounds. Some of them described as no more than like a pin, dragging a pin across you.
Yeah.
So I think, how is that really possible in such a desperate fight? They also say that even his grand fall in the street and his cries for pain are it's all just an act. None of his injuries are sufficient to cause enough pain or enough blood loss to cause him to collapse on the street. It's all a performance.
But that's it. It's enough for the innocent bystander to come up
for
and
sure.
go, there's blood and he's injured.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of blood, absolutely. So they lift him up and their hands are covered in blood, absolutely. These things bleed a lot, but they are not... Yeah, they're not deadly. They're not life-threatening.
It's very death on the Nile, isn't it? Yeah.
It's also shown that despite the fight apparently moving from the bedroom into the parlour and supposedly ending up in this like three-person brawl, not a single item in the house is damaged. there are tables in the parlour full of crockery and plates and
tiny pictures.
Yeah, exactly, like piles of books and ornaments and trinkets and things like that. Not one thing is overturned. Not one chair is upset or anything like that. But of course, at the time, no one really paid any attention to that. They were just like, get the Reverend inside, get him into bed, bandage his wounds. No one's paying attention. Does it look like a scuffle or a fight has happened here? They just help the Reverend. On the stand, the preacher declares that the robbers had stolen his revolver and razor from a drawer and then used them against him, nearly killing him with his own weapons, and had then made off with them.
Isn't that lucky?
He says, well, if he had done all this himself, where were the weapons?
Get rid of them.
He's injured himself. He's cut himself. He's shot himself. He's now lying in the ground. Where was the time for him to get rid of all these weapons? The detective comes back.
Right.
Again, he shows that William has disposed of the weapons himself. After murdering his wife and cutting himself with the razor, he had then entered the woodshed on the grounds of the property, leant out of the window, threw the razor as far as he could out of the window of the woodshed. When William leaned out of the window, his blood-stained shirt had marked the window frame on the inside. The detective had cut out a chunk of window frame, sent it for analysis. Yes, that's blood. Yes, it matches the blood that's on his nightshirt. And he presents this in court. And this is from the woodshed.
How the hell
did it get in the woodshed?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
He then goes, he manages later to find the razor. Because of the quite deep snow at the time, it was difficult to find. But once the snow thawed out, they found the razor within throwing distance.
Yeah.
The pistol, again, is found within throwing distance of when William fell in the street. So he shot himself, he fell where he was found, and he threw the pistol away. But the detective was again able to find it in the snowdrift and go, here is the weapon that you threw away. For the defence, they make much of numerous witness statements. People who come forward to claim that they had seen two men drive away in a horse and buggy. That evening, there had been two men that had scarpered, ran as fast as they can into this horse and buggy. Around the time that the Reverend had been calling for help, surely these had been the murderous blackguards making their escape.
Yeah.
Again, Detective Webster is on the case. If this buggy had been seen making their escape, where are the tracks? Where are the tracks in the snow? Webster also comments about how remarkable it is that these two men themselves left not a single track in the snow.
No footprints
while making their grand escape. On the evening of the 2nd of October 1895, Reverend William Hinshaw is found guilty of murder in the second degree and sentenced to life in prison at Michigan City in Indiana. The Reverend always denied that he had killed his wife. His family and friends stuck by him. They filed appeals and petitions with each new governor who came to power. No luck. Until the 9th of January 1905, when Governor Hanley orders him released on parole.
Okay.
So this is 10 years into his life sentence. Mm. He is not free for long, though.
Oh.
While on parole, William becomes a little too friendly with a married woman.
Come on now, William. You've not learned your lesson.
Anna Freeman. Now, William and Anna check into a motel as husband and wife. Unfortunately, the staff at the motel recognise Anna and contact her husband, who,
even more unfortunately,
is the local sheriff.
Oh. I was going to ask, like, motel, you don't do that if you want repeat business. Let's face it. Like,
yeah.
Waiting for all the people coming by going, oh, motel, and I'm just going to call your husband.
Yes.
There we are. But if it's the local sheriff.
You do when it's the local sheriff.
That phone call. They must have just standing around going, it's so delicious. It's so good. Maybe the sheriff was a real dick.
Straight back to prison for you. He back to prison for 12 years. For that indiscretion.
Well, you break your parole, then yes, you have to go back.
He's back.
The sheriff is just going, guilty, guilty, guilty.
He is released again in 1917.
Right.
Now, during this parole, he arranges for the sale of a farm he owns in Kansas. He owns some property. He then buys a small ranch in Colorado where he rekindles his relationship with Anna Freeman, for the woman from the motel. She's now a widow by this point, so she is now free.
Mm.
However, Colorado is a long, long way from Indiana.
It is.
It's sort of like four states across. And the authorities don't take too kindly for a man on parole
You're not allowed to
running four states away. So back to prison for you.
Back to prison for you. You naughty reverend.
Yeah, now William and Anna, they do marry a few days before he is sent back to Indiana.
Okay.
And she is left to run the ranch on sort of his behalf. A year later, 1918, he is granted parole for the third and final time. Mm. William and Anna end up running a fruit farm in Washington.
Fruit.
Until he dies in 1933, aged 67.
Wow.
There's a story of the Reverend William E. Hinshaw and the murder of his wife.
Oh my God, great story.
It's all very dramatic.
That was so dramatic.
There's a lot going on there.
That was good. Oh no, that was like Agatha Christie kind of drama. Love that. I could see it all played out. Probably she took inspiration. I feel like that's one of the things that would have
I'm loving
inspired.
Detective Webster.
Webster's so good. Yeah, Webster's so hot. He's so hot. I don't know what he looks like, but I would do everything to him. No questions asked. No question. No catch. That was a good story. Oh, there's the bloody reverends. The bloody reverends. It's really nice to see that story as well in a small town because, again, as we talked about, people just determine, no, he's innocent. No. He's innocent. No, we can't question this at all. But if he's knocking off another woman, it's quite a drastic step to kill your wife.
It is. I mean, so we don't know what happened.
Well, what happened in that house
that when that confrontation was made, what was said, what threats were made, what happened between the two women. We don't know. All we know is, yes, that Thurza ended up shot by.
Massive fight breaks out. Yeah.
I mean, the assumption is that it's the Reverend who shoots his wife. Could it be Miss F?
Miss F
isn't sort of never really.
Well, we don't know what happened to her.
Seen nor heard of again, really. And there are very few sort of reports. There's a bit of sort of newspaper articles, but there's very little written about this case. So, yeah, whatever happened to Miss F, was the Reverend, did he take the blame for what Miss F had done? Had she killed who knows?
The funny thing is that I've got a train of thought here, but that train of thought, in a very meta way, makes the point about why these small town people would be like, no, absolutely not, no. And Miss F is so random. We would know, of all of the stories that we've done, we'd know who the mistress was. We'd know her name.
Yeah.
It's not hard. So she's either someone of substantial
influence
that everyone wants to protect. Mm. Now, how influential can you be without being going, she's the harlot, she's led
astray? Was she someone else's wife?
Was it something like that? I went, was it a man?
Well, that's a very fair.
Was it a Miss F? Is this kind of, there was someone he was having an affair with. We are going to say nothing else about it. What if it was a man? What if it was a man and what you would do to cover that up? At the same time, it's the same thing as everyone in that town kind of going, but what if it was something else? What if, I have no evidence to base that on, but I'm going to determinedly say that that was why he committed the murder. And also loads of other people going, no, actually he was really pious and it's Webster. Webster's evil because I bet he punched a crow once. And then that's the reason it's that you can go down these rabbit holes.
You really can.
Because if you don't have a confession or anything like that. So sorry, that was my little, I'll throw that in there.
Go
throw
for
that
it.
In there. But no, it's intriguing.
Yeah, ooh, it's a good story. Yeah. I was very happy when I found
that one. Really, really good story and never heard of before. Mm. Well, what do you think, people? What a good murder mystery that was solved this week. Yes. Well, good crime.
A good crime indeed.
A good juicy crime. Do you think the Reverend was guilty? Is there anyone who thinks he wasn't? Was anyone completely behind him from the start?
Yeah, ruffians all the way.
Ruffians all the way. What do you think happened in his home? Do you think he was having an affair with Miss F? Do you think there was something else that went on? What might have transpired that would lead to this scene? Webster, hottest man who's ever lived, clearly.
Quite right.
For the purposes of this episode, until we find another detective next week who just listens. This is clearly all we want, isn't
just
it?
Someone who listens and stares.
Listens and stares and nods along. We're like, I'd take off all my clothes.
Yes. Do I get naked now?
That's what all the jury were doing the whole time. Yes, Webster. Please send us sketches of what he looked like. Photos. Who would play him in the film? I already have some thoughts.
Okay.
Right now, it's good. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your musings, and your castings for the various people in this drama. Very dramatic story.
Very dramatic.
But most importantly, while you're musing all of this, I think to steady your nerves and to fire you up, mix yourself a loaded pistol.
Absolutely. I mean, at some points through the story, I lost the power of speech.
You were fine. You were honestly fine. So,
but it's a damn good drink. It's very
really
tasty.
Good.
It's gone down a treat, absolutely. So the recipe will be out this evening. So give it a go if you can and let us know what you think.
You were actually fine all the way through. You had a couple of slips. As soon as you relax, you're like, it will be a fun evening otherwise. A delicious drink. If you can't mix up the loaded pistol, send us pictures of whatever cocktails you are enjoying this weekend, whether you're out and about and you're seeing cocktails in bars. Love it when people send us bar pictures, actually. Really good, because then we always pick up new recipes.
Indeed.
Or send us pictures of the concoctions you mix up at home. Whatever's going on in the cabinet, we love to know about it. If you can, please consider joining us on patreon.com, and please, please, please do leave us a review on wherever you listen to these podcasts. If 50% of everyone who listened to this show left us a 5-star review, you've no idea how much it would help our podcast. Also follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, and we're on YouTube as well. And feel free to send us suggestions of things you'd like to hear in the future on the Poisonous Cabinet, and also what we can be doing on our retrospective episode 200. It's coming up soon. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisonous Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.